We want to win in Toronto. We want to win in Toronto, and we feel this is a part of building and growing.
Carroll finds DeRozan. DeRozan pushed. Joseph in the corner for the win. Got it! Corey Joseph in the corner for the win!
To be alive.
Basketball fans, please welcome your 2015-2016 Toronto Raptors! The director of sports science is Alex McKechnie. Assistant coaches, Jamal McGlure, Nick Nurse. Toronto, the head coach of your Toronto Raptors is Dwayne Casey. And now, it's time to meet your starters. First is the big man in the middle. He's number 17, a 7-foot center from Lithuania. This is Jonas Valančiūnas. A 6'9 forward from Argentina. Number 4, Luis Scola. From Missouri, a 6'8 forward wearing number 5, Damari Carroll. At the one spot is number 7. He's a 6-foot guard from Villanova, Kyle Lowry. And number 10, a 6'7 guard out of USC, ladies and gentlemen, DeMar DeRozan! Fans, it's your 2015-2016 Toronto Raptors!
It is Sportsfeld story time. We are looking back. We are going back 4 years to the Raptors 2016 playoff run. The reason we chose this, we were feeling too happy after the David Price game. We thought we need to go rhythm. We needed to go happy, sad. We are going very, very sad. I think this sort of covers the whole breadth of the Raptors fan experience. They do just enough to make you believe and then take it all away from you. Luckily, and we talked about this before we recorded this, and we will talk about it, I'm sure, at the end of recording this, my big takeaway from this whole thing is thank God they eventually become a good team, because this shit was the worst.
I think this playoff run and the game we're sort of focusing on, in particular, game 4 against the Cavs, really, like, this playoff run was exhausting. As it was just, 1 minute they look great, then they're terrible, then there's so many monkeys on their back, then there's injuries, then there's guys stepping up and guys not stepping up, and then there's obviously the Cavaliers juggernaut, which they couldn't get past. Just, like, truly an exhausting playoff series as a fan.
It is sort of incredible to me that, I don't know how to put, not that they make it as competitive as they do, because they're a very good team, but the Cavs team is very, very good. Like, it's a really good Cavs team. A little top heavy, obviously, but the top heaviness of it is really, really, really impressive.
I mean, yeah, you have like prime Kevin Love, you have Kyrie, you have LeBron, and then even like you have J.R. Smith, well, he was still competitive. You have Matthew Dellavedova, who I hate but was useful as a pest that season. You have Channing Frye hitting threes. Like, that was a very good team.
And the Raptors were good as well. This was, I guess we could call it the real breakthrough season. They went 56-26. They were the number 2 seed in the East. It was their first ever 50-plus win season, which at the time, this franchise getting 50 wins was a huge deal. They had gotten 48 and 49 the 2 years prior. But 50 wins was a really, really big deal for me personally.
105-94. The Toronto Raptors are going to win their 50th game as Scott nails the three. 50th game of the season, a franchise record. Toronto wins it 105-97. The Raptors, for the first time in their 21-year history, earn their 50th win. Now 50 and 24 on the season, 29 and 9 at home. The Raptors finished with the fourth best record in the NBA behind the Golden State Warriors, San Antonio Spurs, the Cleveland Cavs, and the Toronto Raptors, the fourth best record in the NBA. Nice performance tonight.
Yeah, this sort of felt like, you know, there was sort of building and building. Obviously, they had that sort of storybook run that was cut extremely short in 2014 of like, oh, the Raptors are a decent team. And then 2015 again, kind of, you know, they pissed themselves against the Wizards in the first round, which was just the worst. That series sucked. Oh my God. And then this season was kind of like, okay, like they've won 50 games. They're the two seed. Kyle Lowry's great. DeMar's great. Valanciunas looks better than he has before. Maybe we signed Damari Carroll, who was going to be the guy to shut down LeBron. And like the excitement in the city from Damari. I remember his first game that season. I want to say he hit a three-pointer like immediately. And everyone was like, yes, we solved it. We solved it with Damari Carroll.
Another special day, I think, for the Raptors family. We want to welcome a player that we've always admired. His talent as a person. I was fortunate enough to work with Damari in Denver. A great human being we're bringing to our program, and we feel very, very privileged. And he was one of our prime targets during free agency. And we want to win in Toronto. We want to win in Toronto. And we feel this is a part of building and growing towards that. And it's an honor for me to sit here and welcome, I think, one of the toughest players in the NBA. Without anything more to say, I want everybody to welcome Damari Carroll. Welcome.
We did not solve it with Damari Carroll, but there was hope for a minute. Also, look at now. He was here for way less time than I thought he was.
Yeah, they moved on from that mistake pretty quick. Damari Carroll, I think you make a great point about him supposedly being what was the missing piece. And he really is indicative of what they almost got in danger of. They almost became the Atlanta Hawks. You remember? And Damari Carroll is the perfect example of this.
Got him from the Hawks too, didn't they?
Yes, exactly right. And those Hawks teams, it was like all five Hawks would get named player of the month and they would overachieve, and then the playoffs would come and they just didn't have a star, so they would get stomped and that would be the end of it. The Raptors came really close to that fate if they don't make the big move.
Yeah, and I think, and it's funny, Damari Carroll was the big move at the time. Like, you know, we got a meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yes.
And that was like, oh my God. And then, you know, there was like the rumblings of like, oh, maybe Kevin Durant, you know, he's at the Jays games and at OVO Fest. Like, we'll see. Then obviously he went to Golden State this season that we're talking about. But I feel like Damari Carroll was the get.
Yes.
The team. And it was kind of like, okay, Masai is actively working now to like improve this team and fill the holes. And also just we sort of talked about this before we started recording, but like the deep, very real belief that I absolutely held until the minute it was no longer possible that Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan were going to be the guys to get it done.
Yes.
I believe that 100%.
This was, I think at the time what people would say is Six is on a wave was sort of the... This was viewed, I know, both internally and externally as the year the Raptors, in our minds, and this is not the national mind, but they really felt like they arrived as a basketball city. The All-Star Game was in Toronto. You remember Sting played the halftime show.
Growing up as basketball players, we all dream of being legendary on the court. Well, tonight, right here on this stage, we have one of the best to ever do it. This man has tons of hits. He has soul, and he knows how to rock a stage. Please put your hands together for music icon, Sting.
Drake and Jose Bautista coach Team Canada at the Celebrity Game, which, I mean, Team Canada at the Celebrity Game. Milosh, Genie, Win Butler, T-Mac, Rick Fox, the Property Brothers, and the excellent Levine versus Gordon slam dunk competition, the best competition ever. It was a really interesting time. This was... We the North was in full effect when, you know, remember that you mentioned that sort of house money year they had a couple years earlier, and unveiling that branding a little early. This was the year that everything was planned to really hit, and the team ended up being better than they expected. Talk about that team depth. They had, by my count here, 9 guys that averaged more than 20 minutes per game, which is really crazy. That's a really... really, really spread out rotation.
Yeah, it was like the pre-bench mob, I guess, of 2018. When, like, you know, obviously the bench mob happened to have guys like Pascal Siakam involved and,
yes,
you know, DeLon Wright and Jakob Poeltl and Fred VanVleet. And now, like, this was sort of like, you had Corey Joseph, you have Patrick Patterson, you have Terrence Ross, you have Bismack. Luis Scola.
Yes. Here's your rotation in order of minutes per game. 30 minutes or more was Lowry, DeRozan, and Carroll. Lowry and DeRozan both elected to their second All-Star games. Kyle, a better scorer, I think, than he got credit for in this period. He was 21 points a game, 6.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds, 2 steals on 39% three-point shooting, which is... that's pretty damn good offensive numbers for a guy who got maligned a lot for his offensive play.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that the Kyle Lowry narrative has always been stronger than the actual reality of Kyle Lowry. Mm-hmm. Like, Kyle Lowry has been very good for a very long time. And the fact that he now has a team surrounding him that sort of suits his style a little more, I think, helps. And, like, obviously there was much... documented headbutting between him and Dwayne Casey, and, you know, is he coachable, is he not coachable, all that shit. But I think Kyle's proven that he's just always been Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
And thank whomever that the Raptors chose to ride that and never sort of give up on that.
They had 6 other guys who averaged at least 20 minutes a game. You have 23-year-old Jonas Valanciunas, who is starting to build JV hype. He's 13 points, 9 boards, 1.5 blocks a game. Corey Joseph, who they signed that offseason. Patrick Patterson with 7-4. Terrence Ross, averaging just under 10 points a game and shooting 38.5% from 3. And then Bismack Biyombo, also a July signing, 8 boards and 1.5 blocks. And Luis Scola, as you mentioned, who played way more than I remember. He started every game that he played.
So much. And it was also like, I remember, and if I remember correctly, Luis Scola's first half of the season was excellent. And it was like, oh, what a great signing. And then around like February, March, like, oh, Luis Scola is like 38 years old. And he just like, I remember he just fell off a cliff.
Yes.
In the second half. Like, and you could tell he had no legs. And, like, his jumpers weren't even really jumpers. It's just like, oh my God. How did this team make the conference final?
I have no idea. That is the well, I look at the teams they play in the playoffs. I don't know that they're better than the teams they were playing.
No.
That's what's crazy is they were a 2 seed. And a part of it is the depth. They had 7 more guys as part of this rotation. James Johnson played about 10 minutes a game. Jason Thompson, who I believe was a buyout guy. And 22-year-old Norm Powell, who jumped back and forth between the G League and the main roster. He played 49 games. He shot 40% from 3. And famously, Blake Murphy knew in Summer League that Norm is going to be a player. And at the very bottom of this, you can see some guys that factor into this era of the team. DeLon Wright played 27 games, played a lot of G League. Bebe played 29 games. Who could forget 6 games of Bruno and 19 games of Anthony Bennett?
Oh, man, that's right. Anthony Bennett's sad. But I remember this season was a story of like trying to figure out what the hell to do with the five.
Yes.
Because like JV was good, but was young and finding his feet. And he'd sort of rotate in and out with Biz. But then sometimes like you'd throw a really small, weird lineup with Scola or Patrick Patterson in there or Jason Thompson. Then sometimes Bebe would look amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the next day he couldn't even find his feet. And it was just like, this team, for a team that made the conference finals, it really did feel like they were experimenting with the lineup up until the last day of the season.
They also never really found the right three. They never really found the right wing guy, which was a problem.
Which is crazy after signing Damari Carroll.
Yes. Basically, until Kawhi, they never really solved this, is the honest-to-God truth. Their three most common starting lineups were Lowry, DeRozan, Johnson, Scola, Valanciunas for 25 games, Lowry, DeRozan, Carroll, Scola, Valanciunas, and Lowry, DeRozan, Powell, Scola, Valanciunas. So four of the five are the same more than half the season, but Johnson, Carroll, Powell, and Johnson, who played about 10 minutes a game but managed to start 25 games, is hilarious to me.
Yeah, and also looking at like the minutes discrepancy of the common of like the most common lineups, like you have your standard, the Lowry, DeRozan, Johnson, Scola, of JV, but then your second most used lineup is Lowry, Corey Joseph, Terrence Ross, Patrick Patterson, Bismack Biyombo.
And this is...
And that line went plus 18!
That's what's crazy. This is sort of, when you look at... I was going through the most commonly used lineups, and what's really funny about it, in the pluses and the minuses, like as you said, that most common starting lineup was minus 4.6 points in rate, whereas Lowry and four bench guys was plus 18. A lot of the minus lineups are Lowry and DeRozan lineups, and when they're separated, like Kojo, DeRozan, Ross, Patterson, Biyombo is a plus 13. So like they're best friends and they were the two best players and they were the two all-stars, but the lineups with them together didn't really work, which I think ends up being what fells this era of the team.
Yeah. And especially with like this other good statistical lineup, it's kind of like a mutant lineup here of Lowry, Joseph, DeRozan, Patterson, and Bismack. Like, I assume that, like, a lot of these plus-minuses are skewed because, like, they're not playing, you know, that Lowry bench lineup isn't playing the Cavs starters, so to speak. Right. But, like, this, like, Lowry, Joseph, DeRozan, Patterson, Biyombo lineup, to me, that looks like a very early draft of what the Raptors do today.
Yes.
Where you have Lowry, you have Corey Joseph, obviously trade up for Fred, you have OG instead of DeRozan, you have Pascal instead of Patterson, and then you have Serge or Gasol at the five. And that, like, you know, an agile big, it's just a very similar style and also very similar to where sort of the NBA went.
Yeah, you can see, that's a very good point. You can see sort of not quite three guard lineups because Ross and DeRozan can sort of fit as twos or threes, but playing Lowry and Joseph together allows one of them to be off ball. And any combination where DeRozan isn't the only sort of off-ball scoring guy, where DeRozan and Ross with Joseph play well, and Ross and Joseph with Lowry play well, but for some reason, and I think it's probably because, you know, Damari Carroll and James Johnson are not very good, is having those ball-stopping guys that you don't need to worry about offensively,
yeah,
really, is what drags that down, because now, to your point about where the team goes, now all five guys on the floor at all times can get a bucket, and that problem with a lot of these lineups is you can sort of say, okay, we're going to let Damari Carroll beat us, or we're going to let James Johnson be the guy that does it. And it ends up really not working out in favor of the Raptors.
Yeah, I remember a lot of these, like the 2014, 2015, 2016 teams specifically. And I guess the 2017, honestly, team kind of feels like the forgotten Raptors team to me of this era. Like, I know they beat... I want to say they beat the Bucks in the first round, then the Cavs kicked their ass. It just seems like they, like other, so I'm not going to count those teams. I don't really remember that team that well. But the, like, there's always one guy on those Raptors teams where, like, you just wouldn't want to – they're all role players, and you wouldn't want to see them on the offensive end, and teams would just kind of leave them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking about, you know, your Chuck Hayes's, your James Johnson's, your Luis Scola's, where it was just like you were playing 4-on-5, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, and we will see this when we get into the playoffs, is obviously this works out in the long run in the regular season because they have the depth, but in the playoffs especially, teams just take away Lowry and DeRozan. And they don't, like, it becomes those problems get amplified to an insane degree, which happens in every NBA playoff series. That's playoff basketball. But I think part of this change is the change of building around DeRozan to building around Lowry. I think that is the other big part of this that you see, is a lot of these are, we have to cover for DeRozan defensively, so we have to play a Damari Carroll to defend the other team's wing. Or we have to, DeRozan's sort of an on-the-ball guy who plays mid-range, so we have to make sure that the spacing is what it is. Whereas now, knowing that Lowry is adaptable and that he doesn't have to be a scorer at all times, or he can be whatever they need him to be, it allows a lot of flexibility in the way they build lineups.
Yeah, and I also think that the way, and, like, again, I don't want to rag too much on Dwayne Casey.
No.
Because I do like Dwayne Casey. But, like, you look at the way these teams played and, like, how their other teams matched up against them. And he only kind of started to figure out, it seemed, like, Dwayne Casey was always slow to make adjustments. That was always his biggest flaw. But then he seemed to not totally trust or know how to use other guys until it was too late. Like, I remember, we'll get into this in episode 2, but in the Heat series this year, until he got hurt, JV just, like, feasted on that team.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, his number is so good.
And it was just kind of like, maybe, like, obviously this was the whole thing with JV Hive. But, like, this was definitely the start of, like, try unleashing a guy who isn't Lowry and DeRozan.
And I think another big part of this, and this was as somebody who was in JV Hive in this era, you'll remember it well, is he would play about 22 minutes and look incredible and then not play the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, that used to drive me nuts.
Drove me nuts.
That used to drive me absolutely crazy. Before we move into the playoffs, this was also a very interesting time in our personal lives because you are in Montreal for a lot of this, correct?
Yeah, for pretty much for the entirety. I went to Montreal. It must have been a week before the playoffs started, I would say, because it was the first time we were doing Bad Jews. So we had a month of rehearsals because we'd never done it before. So I would have gone to Montreal, I got there like April 3rd or something like that. And I guess the playoffs would have started the next week. So the entirety of these playoffs, I was in Montreal doing a play. And what I find sort of funny now, looking back on it, is obviously last year with the Raptors' run, it was, Canada's behind the Raptors and everyone's behind them. That was not the case in 2016. So my habit during the playoffs is we'd have the play is only like 90 minutes long. So we'd run from like 8 to 9:30-ish for a show, sometimes 7 to 8:30. I would get changed. Where the theater is in Montreal is not, maybe there are like sports bars around there, but none that I knew of at that time. So I would hop in a cab and take it back to like sort of downtown Montreal to a sports bar that I knew to watch the Raptors game. And there'd be like 5 people paying attention. And I'd be sitting there alone at a table, just like, so I would always get there with like 8 minutes to go in the game. And I'd be sitting there at the table just like screaming at the television like you do in the playoffs. But like I would have to sort of like catch myself and temper myself a little bit just because like no one else was doing it.
Right.
And it was an extreme. And like I'd watched a couple games with my friend Dave, who lives in Montreal, who's a big Raptors guy. So we saw a couple games together, and then, but it was an extremely weird way to watch the playoffs, possibly not unlike what it'll be like this year with quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I suspect that'll be semi-similar, or at least, but at least it's a little more communal, I guess, potentially. But it was a very weird way to watch the deepest playoff run the team had ever made.
Yeah, very interesting that how perfectly that lined up. I want to ask, I know you don't talk about your career a lot on the show, but what did going to Montreal to do Bad Jews do for you confidence-wise for your career?
I mean, that run was kind of, the first run was kind of a mess.
Right.
Not the show. The show was good. But like where I was in my life and where I think everyone else in the show was in their lives. Like we've talked about it before, myself and the other cast members of the show, because we've done it 3 times now. That first time was kind of like going back to university. Like we were drinking every night after the shows, and there was another show in the theater as well with a bunch of people we knew our age from Toronto that we hung out with. So it was just kind of like the show did really well
right.
at the theater. So that was a huge confidence boost. But I don't think that I had the sort of personal mental fortitude to take that in. I think in the moment, I felt like it was giving me a big boost.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure how much of a boost it actually gave me in retrospect, because I had a great time. Like those 2 months were insanely fun. But from a career professional perspective, I think the other 2 runs did a lot more for me. Just because I was a lot more settled as a human being,
right?
On those 2, and I was able to like take it in a little more, and you know, pay attention to things that were important rather than like we're finishing up. Boy, it's fun to drink with your friends after the show.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
I think that's very interesting that you say it was the other runs that helped, because I feel like knowing you before that run, you didn't talk about work really ever in that end.
Yeah.
Maybe obviously that was, I don't know that it had been a while since you had done something that I was able to come and see, or it seemed interesting that really kicks off a really important part of your life, especially when you trace it back to where you are now.
Yeah, it really did actually. And it sort of is that like, it was a very chaotic couple months.
Yeah.
In a good way. Like I had so much fun. But, you know, the Raptors being in the playoffs is sort of part of that story in my brain.
Mm.
Like, it sort of added to the chaos of, like, I'm in a play, and now I gotta, as soon as I'm done, I gotta get changed and get in a cab so I can watch a basketball game. Like, it was just very weird. And I don't think I would do it the same way today in the same situation. I think I would definitely try and find an easier... Like, I think I would have been okay with, like, staying at the theater with a computer and just, like, watching the end of the game there.
Oh, right.
And then, like, going home.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, there's no reason to run back and forth to bars.
It's fun. It's fun to be running around.
It is, but it's also dumb.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, that is where we were, and that is where we are going to leave off for now. We have playoff time upon us. The Raptors start things out with a series against the number 7 seed, the Indianapolis Pacers. We will get into Raptors Pacers and Raptors Heat next week on Sports Felt Storytime.